Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome, everybody, back to Onceable, a Once Upon a Time podcast brought to you from the folks at Hypeable.com. Just to give you all a refresher on how you can get in touch with us before we start discussing this week's episode, Ariel, you can send us a tweet at Once Upon News. You can post over on the podcast section at Hypeable.com. That's Hypable.com. So this week, I'm Laura. I'm your host, and I'm being joined by Karen and Kristen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
This week's episode is entitled Ariel, and I was joking around before we started, and I said Ariel, the mermaid, not to be confused by Ariel, the location in the Firefly universe. So I just had to get our obligatory Firefly commentary in there for no reason other than I just kind of felt like referencing Firefly because, you know, it's always a good day if you can reference, you know, Firefly somewhere.
And we were all unrewatchable.
That's true. We were all unrewatchable. Yeah. So we all love Firefly. So sorry for you guys who have no clue what we're talking about, but we just felt like the urge to just suddenly need to make a Firefly reference there.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch Firefly.
It's very short and very awesome.
There you go. Joss Whedon, always a good thing. So tonight's episode, what is the reaction that you guys to it? Was this a favorite or not so much? Karen, how about you?
I actually really liked this episode, and it's kind of strange because I didn't particularly like Ariel all that much. And I mean, that like whole storyline was interesting, but what I really liked about it was the fact that we got all these secrets out in the open and like people were finally talking to each other and saying like, you know, what their feelings were. And it's something that I feel like has been a really long time coming. So it was nice to sort of get everybody on the same page.
I loved this episode, and there are like three distinct reasons that I love this episode. I love this episode because of Hook. I love this episode because Regina was on fire. and I love this episode because of the reveals and like getting David's secrets all out there and everybody finally being honest with each other. And that was just awesome. So yeah, I really love this episode, but I wasn't a huge fan of the Ariel plotline either. I understand, you know, why they needed her. So it makes sense, but you know, give it or keep it or take it. I don't care.
Yeah, I really love this episode too. I agree. I'm not always like a big person who loves something that's like very formulaic. And the way that they did, you know, okay, you have to tell the truth to build the bridge to get to Neil. And you're like, you know, it's kind of a formula kind of thing. And, you know, you sort of know how it's going to play out. And sometimes stuff like that can be a little predictable and a little yawn, ho-hum kind of thing. But I really loved it. I agree with you, Kristen. I was just like, oh my gosh, are they, like, how deep is the truth they're going to tell? I guess what I was sitting there and, you know, some of the truths did not particularly surprise me. Like, obviously, as David said, his truth, that did not particularly surprise me. Hook's didn't wildly surprise me either. I thought he was just going to say, you know, I'm in love with Emma. But I did not know what Emma and Mary Margaret were going to say, and it was really, really cool finding out. So yeah, I definitely loved this episode too. How about some quotes here? This is the first episode in a while where I think they definitely brought on the funny. You know, for a while there, we've had some very serious situations and maybe like one or two one-liners, but this was definitely an episode where we had more of what you might call the zingers. What about you, Kristen? What's your favorite quote from the episode?
My favorite is Regina, who I just loved this episode. She was awesome. And it was when she was talking to Rumpel and she said, "You're not going to die at anyone's hands but my own." It's so true. Like, she's not going to let some other person take him out. Like, he's been, like, the bane of her existence for, you know, a while now. And she's not going to just let somebody else take care of him. So I just thought it was very Regina of her.
Totally. Karen, how about you?
Did you guys notice we all picked Regina lines?
Yeah, we did. It's true.
She was amazing this episode. My favorite was when she was like, "Fine, you want to follow the evil munchkin's dirt road? Be my guest. And it was just, oh my God, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, I know. You wanted to go follow, 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 follow. Oh, sorry for my off-key singing there. But yeah, there's, you know, like somewhere in there, somebody should filk that and make it a, you know, a whole thing. There's, you know, follow the dirt road. That would be great. I had one too that's also a Regina quote, and mine was, "You went to a long dead octopus for advice, and you're going to blame me for your problems." I thought that was just great, because I think Ursula the Sea Witch is such an iconic looking figure, and for her to reference all of that into it, I thought was really, really great. The other one I just have to give a little baby shout out to was the whole you know, fork thing, and she's like, "Lunch trident or salad trident?" And they're like, "No."
I loved that. Yeah. And then she puts it in her thing and she's like, "It's really not that valuable." And it just made me think of the grotto and all of the things that were pointless, like silly things.
Yeah, right. You're waiting for somebody to break into a chorus of, you know, I want to be where the people are, and that whole, like, you're just waiting, like, where's Sebastian when you need him? You know, where's Flounder? You're just waiting for the whole rest of it there. So I loved the little fork. It was so cute. So.
And in the end, it wasn't pointless because, bam, it went to Regina's neck. I screamed during that part. It was so intense.
Gosh, I was too. I was like, oh my God, did like Ariel whip out like a knife and just toss it in Regina's jugular? I'm like, am I watching HBO? I just want to check. Like, what's going on here? And she's like staggering off, and then she plunks out the little baby fork, and I'm like, oh, that's great. She pronged her. That was great. Prong the evil queen. If only it were that easy. Why haven't more people thought of pronging her? I don't know why. So anyway, let's get into talking about some of the finer points of the episode. Why don't we start off talking a bit about Emma, because obviously a good deal of this episode is about Emma's story arc. The concept of Emma having perhaps magic of her own, or, you know, Henry's the heart of the truest believer, but Emma's got to believe and there's hope too. What do you guys think? Is there, you know, is Emma going to make her own magic here in Neverland, and is that going to save the day? What do you guys think?
It was really interesting that they were trying to get her to, like, harness her magic, and Regina is trying to help her. And I'm like, Snow has got to be, like, dying over there. Like, no, like, you can't learn from Regina. You have to do it yourself. You know, like, it just seems like a really bad idea to let Emma try and harness her anger to control her magic.
Yeah, like, that's just not going to be a good path to go down. Like, you just have seen how enticing it has been for somebody. Like, I mean, I feel very Star Wars-ish going, you know, don't give in to the dark side, you know, Luke, you are my father and all that. But yeah, I mean, it's evil can be enticing, or that dark side. It seems like people get very lost down there. And I agree that Snow doesn't want her to get lost. How about you, Karen? What do you think?
Well, I think Snow realizes that they're going to need the magic that's inside of Emma, so she's going to have to do it one way or another. And I definitely don't think she's comfortable with it, but I think she realizes, you know, how much that is necessary. In terms of Emma, though, like, it does kind of worry me that she's being taught by Regina, and I really hope they don't go down that path of whether or not she's gonna, like, go dark or something like that, because she's the product of true love, and I mean, she's not exactly, like, the happiest person in their little group, but I have a really hard time seeing her, you know, struggling with the idea of being evil, and I really hope that she can find another way to harness her power other than her anger, because she does have a lot of pent-up anger, but I think that she has a lot of love inside of her too, and we've seen that over the last two seasons, especially when it comes to Henry.
I think what's interesting about Emma, unlike Regina and Rumple, is Regina and Rumple are sort of like the success at all costs kind of thing. Like, the end consistently justifies the means. There is no middle ground. Whereas Emma is, I guess I'd call her kind of a pragmatist. Like, she might do something she's, you know, not 100% on if it had a really good outcome, but I mean, I don't know that like murder, death, and mayhem would be her ultimate of what she would do, but I think there's definitely some more lines she would cross. So I don't know if she's totally a ends justify the means girl in all cases, but I think there are definitely more lines she's willing to cross than, say, David or Mary Margaret are.
Yeah, I also think it might have something to do with her ultimate goal isn't self-preservation. Like, with Regina and Rumpel, it's always been, you know, I have to take care of myself. I have to protect myself, you know. She's more worried about Snow and David and Neil and Henry. Like, if she had to sacrifice herself to save them, you know she would. And so I think that has something to do with it, too. I don't think she could ever truly go dark just because her motives are always so much purer than Rumpel and Regina's.
You're right. And when she doesn't have, like, the pure motive, like, that's her secret, which is kind of, you know, a whole other thing that this episode kind of based around. So, yeah, interesting. Deep stuff going on here. Continuing with Emma, we have Pan here with, you know, he put this information out about, you know, to Hook about, you know, by the way, Neil is still alive. And then obviously Snow gets the information, David gets the information, and then Mary Margaret, you know, just spills it because she can't keep it inside, which was kind of cool because you sort of wondered if they were going to really, you know, go down the path of keeping things from each other again. And it feels like they've sort of matured and moved on from it a little bit and are willing to share with each other. But what do you think Pan's motive was? Like, did he really think Hook was going to spill the beans, not spill the beans? Like, what did he really want Emma to know about Neil? Like, there's got to be more to this. They got to the Echo Caves. Like, what do you think's going on with Pan here and hiding Neil? Was this all too easy? Is it part of a test? What do you guys think?
Oh, I totally think that it's part of a test. I think that Pan definitely wanted to see what Hook was going to do, whether or not he was going to tell anybody, which, by the way, when he did, I like fist pumped the air because I was like, yes, you know, he's not keeping the secret. And it was so good. But I think the whole point of this was to get them to Echo Caves and was to get them to reveal their secrets, because I have a feeling Pan, I don't know whether, like, you know, he was there hiding in the shadows or if he has some sort of connection with the Echo Caves, but I think he knows their secrets now and he's going to try to use that against them.
Yeah, seriously, I was like waiting for him to like drop from the ceiling or something, or just go like wahaha and like destroy the bridge. Like, I was totally waiting for him to destroy the bridge and like Emma and Neil would be trapped on one side and everybody else would be trapped on the other. Like, seriously, that's what I thought was going to happen. So I was kind of surprised when Pan, you know, did not show up there. I was really taken aback.
Yeah, that little land bridge thing gave me Lord of the Rings flashbacks.
Oh my God.
And I was like, it's going to break. It's going to break right in the middle. Like, it's going to break. Like, what are you guys doing? And it didn't. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. But yeah. I was worried too.
I know, the Balrog didn't come up from the depths and... You know, where's Gandalf when you need him? Yeah, exactly. Okay, since we're talking about that whole Echo Caves thing, this is probably a good time to get into the whole idea about what was behind the Echo Caves. And I thought that was just sort of an amazing imagery that went on, that the truth, you know, could echo louder than like any lie or any secret. I thought, wow, that, you know, the truth would just resonate. I thought that was just such a cool metaphor that they had going, and every single one of them had a secret, Hook's being that he could actually love somebody more than his first love, Mila, and that he could actually love Emma, that it's not just infatuation. And we do in fact know it is the truth, because the bridge formed. If he was, you know, pulling it out of his rear end there, the bridge wouldn't have formed. So we absolutely know that that is true. And I think that's one of the very first times we've seen Hook totally vulnerable, certainly to a group of people like that. We had Snow wanting other children and admitting that she's, you know, PO'd about what she missed with Emma's childhood. David doing, I think, the predictable that we all thought about him not being able to leave Neverland without dying. Although I would have liked him to reveal something else. I mean, I thought that was cool and all, but surely David must have some other deep, dark secret somewhere. And then Emma with the whole Neil thing about admitting the feelings and then going another step deeper. I thought that was amazing when she talked about then like wanting to like bury her pain and not going back to those places. So which secret was your favorite?
My favorite is Hook's, because you knew the minute he got into the Echo Cave and was telling them, you know, what they had to do. And he had mentioned it when they were outside, but standing there, you could tell he knew exactly what he had to say. And you could tell he lost something by admitting it. Like, you know, he lost his bravado. He lost a bit of what makes Hook Hook. And so that one, I think, is one of the ones that cost the most for the person giving up the secret, because the rest of them, I'm sure, feel better now.
Yeah.
Having let everybody know. With him, he now is vulnerable and out there, and he hasn't had to do that before.
Right. And I think it's also different, too, because he has been somewhat open with Emma in the past, and I guess you could say shown a degree of vulnerability. But for him just to do that in front of David and Mary Margaret, I mean, that's just huge that step.
I love the little nod from David at the, like, after he shares his secret and the land bridge starts to form and they all kind of realize that he told them the truth. He looks over and David kind of nods at him. And I just loved it. It was a nice little moment for them, too, in the middle of all this crazy.
See, I'm of two minds with this, because on the one hand, I'm really, really relieved that all of this stuff is out in the open, especially now that, like, Snow knows that David can't leave the island and that, you know, everybody kind of knows how Hook feels about Emma. It's just a relief for it to all be out there for everybody to know, because it was starting to get old with all these, you know, who's talking to who and who knows what and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I feel like for the audience, most of this stuff wasn't a secret. And so it was kind of a letdown. I totally agree with you, Kristen, though, that like Hook's admission was kind of amazing and it was so raw and honest that I really liked that. But my favorite one was from Emma. And I think that's because we don't get to see inside of her head all that often. And this was the one secret that I really couldn't have guessed at, or I wasn't sure exactly how she was feeling. And it was just kind of amazing that she told Neil what she was thinking, and he kind of accepted that, and he didn't really blame her. And you can tell how hurt he was, but at the same time, he completely understood where she was coming from.
I think really what made it for me, too, was Emma telling her secret, because I think we all could have guessed the secret about her loving Neil, but then when it took that second step about her burying it because she didn't want to feel that pain again and wanted him, you know, gone so she didn't feel that again, I thought, wow, that was something I did not see coming. And I really loved that she was so dead honest about that, because I think she's not often that honest with anybody but Henry. And I think it was really great to see her be so open to somebody other than Henry. The other thing that I wished, like I said, my only like slightly disappointing thing is the David secret. I was like, yeah, okay, so David's dying. Is that the only secret Prince Charming has in his entire life? Like, I just felt like, you know, there's, I don't know, I just felt like I wanted something more with David. I also kind of really wanted something from Neil, too. I don't know why we didn't get something from Neil. Like, it would have been, I don't know, nice if the bridge crumbled a little bit and he had to fix the last bit or something. Like, I just wanted Neil to say something, too. I mean, I think it was great that he totally embraced Emma and you could see that he, like, you know, forgave her for what she said. Like, he didn't have a problem with it. And I guess that's kind of a truth in of itself. But I really, I don't know, I really wanted something from Neil.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, especially on David's. I was kind of disappointed, too, because we had just had Hook tell David, you know, like, I kissed Emma, and Emma goes, that's not a secret, I told Snow. Well, David not being able to leave the island wasn't really a secret because Hook knew it, too. So I was like, oh. I know, like, the bridge formed, so it is his darkest secret, or it wouldn't have worked. But I was hoping that the bridge wasn't going to form and that we, and that, you know, they'd look at David and say, that's not your darkest secret. And he'd have to kind of think and say, what is, you know, like, I was kind of hoping for that. We didn't get it, but.
Yeah. Yeah. We just wanted that. Like, yeah, I agree. Like that extra piece. We just wanted something to go just kind of that extra mile. And it just, I mean, it wasn't bad, but it, cause I think because the others were so powerful, I think that's why his was kind of anticlimactic, because everybody else was so powerful in a way that, that we didn't always see right away. I think that we just saw, obviously totally saw his coming. And I think that's what kind of took the climactic element out of it a bit. So anyway, why don't we switch tacks a little bit and talk about some of our other characters. Regina isn't in that cave. It would have been fantastic to hear what truth Regina revealed. If she was in there, boy, would that have been fun. Or Rumple too. But Rumple Rumple and Regina have, you know, joined up after Regina strangles Dream Bell. I actually kind of enjoyed Regina strangling Dream Bell. If for no other reason, I found Dream Bell incredibly annoying every episode she's popped up. I mean, I have to say, I think more so than overly optimistic Mary Margaret, I really disliked Dream Bell. So I was just like, yeah, choke her. Because I really kind of wanted her gone too. You know, did you guys realize that Dream Bell was like Pan or the Shadow or what was your prediction on who this Bell thing was until Regina did the big reveal there?
Oh, I knew she wasn't real from the very beginning. Like, I knew that there was something sinister going on. I honestly thought it was going to be Pan, which would have been kind of weird considering they, like, almost kissed and stuff like that. But I really didn't see the shadow coming, and I was pretty surprised by that. But I'm glad that, like I said, this episode was great because, you know, everything is finally out in the open, and Regina, you know, unveiled the shadow, and now Rumple knows that it wasn't real, and it was just a relief to finally get to that point.
I'm just like, my mind just went off there on the Pan and Rumple ship for a minute. I was like, is that a ship? I'm like, oh God, that's just so evilly wrong on, oh God. Like,
creepy.
Yeah, creepy. I just, you know, that's just, oh God. Like that just pretending that you're somebody else's love and not, oh God, that's just like really creepy. So the big reveal happens. What about Regina and Rumple, as Kristen put it in our show document, they're like the dream team now of evil magic. I mean, it's like, you know, you want magic? Here's Rumple and Regina in this corner. Do you guys think they'll work well together, or do you think this isn't going to work out right?
Well, I just love that whole scene where they're trying to kind of figure out what to do and how to get, because they figure out that they have to get back to Storybrooke somehow to get whatever it is that Rumple needs from his shop, and they're just like standing there mulling it over, and he says something, and then she goes, ah, that's it. And like, it is just really great to see them like working together but not working together like at all. And I actually really like them in Neverland together, because it seems like Rumple's a lot less tortured all of a sudden, and Regina is like, this episode was just on fire, so they were hilarious. But as far as like them working together long term, as long as they have the same goal, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I am totally on board with this dream team. I think it's amazing, and they do work really well off of each other. I think I really like seeing Regina's motherly side come out like this, and I'm really, really impressed by Rumple so far, because he's really been not thinking of himself. And I know at the end of this episode that, you know, survival instinct sort of kicks in, but he was so willing to sacrifice himself to save Henry and to kind of, you know, keep his family together, improve himself to Bay and all of that. And I love that side of him. And I really, you know, I don't think that the animosity between these two is ever going to go away. And I'm okay with that because I think it makes for, you know, a lot of comedy and a lot of drama. But I like the fact that they're sort of, they have this working relationship right now. And, you know, considering how much they were at each other's throats, you know, in the last few seasons, it's really nice to see that. And I hope it continues.
Yeah, I like the idea of them teaming up together for Henry. I guess what I just feel bad at is that I feel like with Rumpel, we have had such a really incredibly great story arc, and we've seen him travel such a huge road, and we've really seen him, you know, kind of coming to the side of light, coming to the side of good, and either and Pan torturing him with that fact, saying, you know, could you forgive yourself? You know, were they going to forgive you? Could you forgive your father? You know, you can see Pan toying with him, yet Rumpel doesn't, you know, easily go back down that path of darkness. And I feel like Regina just hasn't had that moment yet for her to totally, like, kind of turn around. Like, she's just like, get me another fireball. Let me rip another heart out. Like, she's still, like, not, I don't want to say, like, not in the Rumpel happy place, but I guess she's not in the happy place yet. And I'm wondering if that's because Rumpel has found some kind of love and happiness with Belle, and that's sort of what's grounding him, and Regina just doesn't have that sort of love yet to ground her. I'm feeling kind of bad for Regina. I like this idea of the team, but I'm kind of concerned for Regina here. Are there more, you know, are there higher stakes here in Neverland? And because she's not in her happy place, does that mean there's a worse outcome for Regina? I don't know. So the next part of the story arc is the fact that we get introduced to Ariel, which we've known has been coming forever because they've been teasing the mermaid since, I think, last spring. So finally, you know, we have the mermaids and Ariel, and there's this concept that the mermaids are going to travel between the worlds. And we do know that the mermaids are around because when the ship was sailing to Neverland to begin with, it was under attack from the mermaids, which I think we could kind of go with the idea then that the mermaids are independent operators now. Do you guys, because I know that was sort of my opinion, and then you guys were saying, no, they were in league with Pan. Do you guys feel like the mermaids are independent agents that travel between worlds, or are they in cahoots with Pan, do you think?
I think it's very possible that there's a contingent of them on Neverland that believe Pan, that like Pan, because in all of the Peter Pan stories, he's friends with the mermaids. So I feel like it's totally plausible that there's a group of mermaids that stay at Neverland or do whatever Pan needs, and that they may have been the ones that attacked the ship in the pilot for the first episode of the season. But I also think that, like Ariel, there's probably a lot of them that go between worlds, and I don't know exactly where Ariel's, like, kingdom or Triton's kingdom would be, like which kingdom that we know, like the Enchanted Forest or Neverland, or we don't know where exactly his fits in there, but I'm sure she would do, you know, and go wherever she pleases because she has, you know, a different outlook than some of the others.
Okay, yeah, definitely that makes sense then. So we have Ariel, and we have sort of our obligatory you know, fairy tale character meets Snow White back in the days when Regina was pursuing her ruthlessly through the enchanted forest.
That's how everyone is involved. Like, right. Everyone has met Snow at some point.
Yes. And was it just me, or did Snow's wig look particularly mangy this episode?
I was like, yeah. She was having it a little rough.
I was like, Snow's been on the run for a while. The hair is just at an all-time low here, though her pencils and eyebrows get better each time. So we have the whole Ariel and, you know, meeting Prince Eric, which was cute. I mean, they definitely, you know, kept the same prince idea. Who was it, just me, or did he not look like Neville Longbottom from the Harry Potter movies? Did he look a little bit like Neville to you guys?
He looks like a grown-up Matt Lewis, like 10 years older or something, like just a little bit older than he is now. Like, my goodness, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I do see, like, a little bit of Neville in him now that you mention that, but, like, Matt Lewis, like, the real person Matt Lewis, very good-looking. I was not impressed with Prince Eric all that much. Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a little shallow of me, but I was really kind of hoping he'd be a little bit hotter than he was.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of true. I mean, it definitely is the kind of, I don't know, I guess we could say in the series, you're right, they do tend to cast a lot of incredibly attractive people. Like, the guys are all have that really, like, you know, rugged good look, strong jawline kind of thing. Or at least the guys who play the princes certainly do. And you're right, and he's kind of a, you know, average looking guy. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But yeah, I mean, that was definitely a break from, I think, sort of the mold that they've traditionally been doing this time. Did you guys catch the thing where he said, was it just me, or did it say he was, you know, kind of, you know, was he's going to go out on this big journey and explore? Was it just me, or did they say he's going to go across the sands to
Agrabah?
Okay, that's yes. What I thought, and I was just like, woo, connecting over there with Wonderland. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, his trip, man, I'm a little confused as to where he ended up, because Regina says he's in Storybrooke, but I'm wondering if she just told Ariel that, because we also kind of wondered if he was the second crate guy.
Right.
Because there's somebody else in a crate, you know, in Pan's camp. So I'm still really confused as to where Prince Eric might be right now.
That's a really good point. I mean, yeah, I was even thinking, so he's going to Agrabah and then he's going to Storybrooke. Like, how is that going to work? Yeah.
Yeah. It seems weird.
Yeah. That was a little strange. So I agree. There's, maybe Eric's whereabouts are not. And we all know Regina is not above lying at all, because she's not in her happy place. No, that's a great theory. That's also a great theory about the crate, too. So do you both think that it's Prince Eric up there in that extra crate?
I mean,
I just don't have a guess as to who else it could be. Yeah.
Actually, I've been wondering, and I haven't really thought about who it could be other than, and I don't know that this would work out, but I was just like, is it maybe Hook's father in the crate? That couldn't be. So, I'm curious who's in that crate. I would love to know. Or is it Tinkerbell? Do you think they've trapped Tinkerbell in the crate? They figured out Tinkerbell might have been helping the other side, or I don't know. I'm really curious who's in the crate, and I hope we get some kind of reveal. I mean, whoever it is, they didn't make the person important enough to put them in the Echo Caves to find out. So I guess they still have the other crate, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Unless maybe it's one of the Darlings, which would be really weird because,
it's a Wendy in the box.
Yeah, like it could be a Wendy in the box. Yeah, no, I don't know.
I was really expecting them to reveal that this episode, and they didn't. And I was like, okay, I don't know if it's going to be somebody totally random now, or like if they're going to lead up to it more, or if we'll never know. That'll be horrible. That'll drive me nuts.
I like the idea of it being Wendy in the box. I really do. That would be very, very cool if it's Wendy in there, only because like she has figured in before. I think that would be awesome to get the Darlings on some level. I think that would be like very cool. And since we know that Neil is Balefire, you know, knew who, you know, the Darlings were and everything, I think that would be cool in some senses, but who knows? That's a good question. Who's in the box? Getting back to Ariel though. So we had this Ursula legend, which, you know, is supposed to grant her the power to walk and then, you know, but, you know, she doesn't quite get what she wants because Eric's going to be, you know, on his own. And then she's, you know, talking to the sea, hoping to meet Ursula, and up swims Regina disguised as Ursula. Did you guys realize it was Regina right away? It took me a second for it to kick in that it was Lana Parrilla. Did you guys realize right away?
Oh, yeah. I knew it from last week from the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, I recognized her in the trailer last week. And I loved that she almost was doing an impression of the actual Ursula voice.
Yes!
Like, yes!
Like, there were moments where she was dead on to the accent that Ursula uses in Disney's The Little Mermaid. And I was like, holy cow, like, that's awesome. Like, just a lot of fun. I was like, that's just a throwback, man.
Yeah, it that definitely, yeah, like, that did not sound like her voice. I mean, it just totally didn't. Like, that's what was throwing me for the longest time. And I was just like, oh my God, no, it's her. It's her. Yeah, I love that. And I also have to say props for that CGI. I am not always a fan of the CGI. I thought the octopus CGI looked particularly good. I really liked it.
The CGI in Neverland has been better.
Yeah.
Just in general. They've done a little better in Neverland, and I'm hoping that it stays that way, because before there have been instances where the CGI has just kind of drawn me out, but it's been really good this season.
Yeah, I think what may be helping their budget is the fact that they're in the forest here, and they're actually, I think they're probably roaming around a real forest up in Vancouver somewhere, so they're throwing all their budget the other way, maybe. Who knows? But so we get the whole Ursula storyline, and you know she has the bracelet that she puts on Snow, and then she you know realizes that she's been tricked, and she saves Snow, takes the bracelet off, and the price is Regina, and of course, and no second chances, and she loses her voice. Did you guys, when Regina gets threatened by the real Ursula, did you guys see that coming? Were you guys like, oh my God, there's a real, like, sea goddess, and apparently she's got one up on Regina? What did you guys think of that?
That was so surprising. I really didn't see it coming, and I love that they did that, because I was like, oh, I'm very much on the fence with, like, I mean, we figured out fairly early on that Regina's not the real Ursula, because she's like, oh, I have an idea. And, you know, she knew that it was going to work because nobody's seen Ursula for so long. And on the one hand, I was like, oh, this is really cool that Regina's going to sort of be like Ursula. And yeah, she did a fantastic job with the voice. And I love that she sort of like changed her personality. And it was that sort of like Disney villain thing that we had before. And I was talking to somebody else, and they're like, you know, I was really hoping that it would be like a bigger girl to have that sort of representation on the show. And I was like, oh, you know, that's true. It would have been really cool to get somebody who was sort of like larger than life. And even though Regina is like that, you know, to have a female villain who's bigger and can kind of like really pull off that huge personality would have been really cool. And then we got this, like, new Ursula, like, the real Ursula, and she was still tiny, like, in that image. And so that was a little disappointing, because I think it would have been really cool if they got that representation and went down that other path.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That would have been really cool. I was wondering the entire time why there was a mirror behind Snow and Ariel. Like, they kept showing you reflections in the mirror. And while they were at the ball, and I was like, why are we doing this? Like, what is with the mirror? And I loved that tie it in the end, and she, you know, uses it to talk to Regina. I was like, I don't know if that's really its purpose, but I love that, you know, there was an actual purpose for the mirror, and it wasn't just in the scene to make it pretty.
I really want to talk about Ariel, like, herself, because here's the thing. I was really looking forward to this episode. I was super hyped for an Ariel episode. The Little Mermaid's, you know, been one of my favorite Disney movies for a really long time. I think the whole mythology and stuff is really cool. And Ariel's just kind of a really fun character. And she felt very flat to me in this episode. She was very two-dimensional. And I think part of that comes from the fact that we didn't get anything of her family. It was all focused on the prince, which obviously is a big part of her story, but a huge part of her story is her father and the way that she feels at home and wanting to escape her world and that sort of thing. And we didn't get any of that. And granted, this is the first episode with her in it, so maybe there will be more of that later on, but that was kind of disappointing to me. And she was a very sort of like floppy, sort of flimsy character, and I really didn't like how naive she was, I guess, which I know is part of the Ariel, you know, storyline, especially in the Disney movie, but I felt really betrayed when she put that bracelet on Snow and trapped her, and that she didn't realize that she was being tricked, and then she kind of, like, went away, and I know she came back, but it's just sort of hard for me to kind of forgive her for the things that she did in this episode and for, you know, them not making her as three-dimensional.
Yeah, it was, I agree with you with that naive kind of persona with her. Like, as she's running down with the bracelet and just to like go slap it on Snow's wrist. I mean, she didn't even ask her, like, do you want to do this? It's just like, here's the bracelet. You've got fins. Go dive off. This is what you want. I was like, whoa, holy decision making there, Batman. I was kind of surprised that that's was the angle they went on. I think so, though, too. Like, the Little Mermaid story can be kind of tough because, unlike some of the other Disney stories, like, let's say, like, Sleeping Beauty or Mulan or, you know, any of the other, you know, with the princesses in them, she has so many friends who are animals. You know, she's got Flounder, she's got Sebastian, and then I can't think of the name of the seagull. What's the name of the seagull?
Scuttle.
Okay. Or the pelican, whatever he is. I forget what he is. But she's, you know, so I guess you're kind of stuck with, you know, I mean, they don't really want to put a guy in a lobster suit. I mean, that would just not, you know, that could just really look bad. But I guess, like, in fairness to them, it is kind of hard to flesh some of it out because her friends are all, like, you know, animals. But at the same time, I really agree with you, Karen, that, you know, like, her father, like you said, is such a huge part of the story arc, and they weren't really getting into that. So I definitely see where you're coming from.
Well, and this is going to sound a little silly, but the other thing that was really missing from Ariel is her hair. I know that when you're a real person in the real world and you're swimming, your hair is wet. And no matter what color it is, if it's a dark color, it's all going to look dark. Well, the only scene we really got to see her red hair in was the ball. And then after that, her hair was wet the rest of the episode. And it might seem really silly, and I know there's no other way to fix it. Like, you can't have her in the water with dry hair. That would be really stupid. But so much of what, like, is iconic about Ariel is her hair. And so I think that just kind of, the sheer fact that we couldn't see her hair the entire time and really identify her with it, for me, it kind of, you know, it was took something away from her character for me.
Yeah, I mean, she did have, like, the really long hair, and I'm pretty sure she's a natural redhead, or at least has been a redhead for a really long time in her acting career. So, yeah, but I agree, it could have certainly punched out a little more. I also loved that she wasn't a very anorexic looking Ariel. I love that she was curvy. Like, Ariel looks like she's had a cheeseburger, you know, that, you know,
yeah.
it was, you know, I was just like, okay, she's filling out the clamshell. She has hips. Like, it was, you know, I think it's really, I kind of love that they're not just doing this incredibly skinny, skinny petite person. I actually, you know, like I said, I love that Ariel looked like she had some sort of curves, which I think was definitely good there too. I liked that aspect of it.
Where do you get a cheeseburger under the sea?
Well, it's not like she's eating seafood. That could just go badly on so many levels.
The sailors just dropped it off the boat after she saves them.
There you go. Here, have a burger.
Thank you.
You need this.
Feeding the fish. Oh God, the imagery going on there. Oh, we're going so badly. Oh,
it's almost midnight for, like, all three of us, there you go. So that would explain why.
Yeah, we're a little punchy right now, and Jen's not here to keep us in line. Jen's going to regret being sick for this podcast. She's like, what are you doing? You're talking about feeding fish.
Cheeseburgers.
So maybe this is a good time to dive into our mailbag and talk about some listener feedback here. So, anybody have anything else to bring up before we go into our mailbag?
Actually, can we talk about Wonderland really quick?
Sure.
I know that we didn't get an episode this week, which I was totally surprised by. I was all ready to watch it on Saturday, and there was no episode, which made me kind of sad. But I just have to say, for me, this is a big deal. I don't know, but did you guys see that Jafar's hair is, like, gone in the commercial for the next episode?
Oh, my God.
I went back and looked after you pointed it out, and it looks a lot like Aladdin's hair.
It's short. It's not really curly anymore. I mean, like, it's gone.
Yeah, Jafar's hair is just about as consistent as Dorothy's braids are in The Wizard of Oz. You know, it's just like, I mean, and then there is episodes that look like he's had a bad Jerry curl. Like, it's just
I'm totally cool with this change. Like, it's a really big change, and there's no way that they can just be like, oh, Jafar, you had a haircut. Like, that would be so weird. But I'm really happy that they decided to change it, because every time I looked at it, I was just like, really bad Jerry curl. And it reminds me of Coming to America. I don't know if you guys have seen
that. Oh my God.
Yes. But when they're sitting against the couch and they like lean forward and all the stuff's on the couch, like, that's what it reminded me of.
Well, and it's like, well, Naveen Andrews also is a very attractive guy. I mean, a lot of the guys in this show are not in what you would call, like, you know, quote unquote, like, period hair. I mean, obviously, like, David and Hook and Rumpel, like, that's what their hair looks like. And even if it doesn't quite fit into what their character maybe should have, like, we just kind of suspend belief and that's fine. Like, I don't understand why Naveen Andrews just can't have his, like, Naveen Andrews hair. I don't know. I think I would have found it far less distracting than, you know, what we've been, you know, going through. So, I don't know, like, you know, at what point did making Naveen Andrews not attractive seem like a good idea?
I have no idea, because I can attest to the fact that that man has beautiful hair. I was very lucky to interview him at San Diego Comic-Con, and I was sitting right next to him, and he does have very nice hair.
Oh, so jealous. So jealous on so many levels. All right. So can we shift now into our feedback section?
Yes, now that we've talked about Jafar's hair.
Jafar's hair. We've gotten it out of our system. So we had some good feedback this week. And one item that we had is from a person who says, my name is Anastasia, too. And she's talking about the Will and Anastasia backstory from Neverland. And she says, about Will and Anastasia's backstory, there was some hints that points to the Red Queen having learned magic from Korra, her being the Queen of Hearts when the couple came to Wonderland. What after learning all that dark magic, Will and Anastasia end up growing apart, and maybe if he doesn't like her learning all the dark stuff or whatnot. She, in a desperate attempt to make him stay with her, ends up taking his heart, thus controlling him and making him stay with her. This would be the point where she breaks his heart, and then Alice comes and helps him get his heart back, essentially freeing him from the Red Queen. Isn't it so much more tragic that way, rather than a third person coming between them? So I think that's kind of an interesting concept. What do you think about Anastasia and learning her magic from Korra, and maybe having actually stolen the Knave's heart or pulled Will's heart? What do you guys think about that?
I think that's a really interesting theory, and I can definitely see it happening with Anastasia just not wanting to give him up, but he's really not cool the way that, you know, she's turning out, but then she's like, well, I don't want to change, and you know, she just wants that sort of control. The only problem I see with this is that Alice said that she helped him get his heart back, so if that were the case, it sort of makes me think that she would know about Anastasia, that she would know that he had been with the Red Queen. And I guess that's not necessarily the way that it would have to go, but I feel like she would have a bit more of an idea of who this Anastasia person is if this had been the case.
Yeah, I think when I think of it, it's kind of a variation of what the listener said. I kind of thought of it being Korra that took Will's heart, not Anastasia. And so, you know, Anastasia and him were not together because he didn't have his heart anymore and he wasn't the same. And so then Alice and Cyrus, who knew the Knave, we haven't really seen how they met the Knave, but they knew him at some point. Maybe they helped him get his heart back from Korra. And so since then, him and Anastasia have not had a chance to reconnect. Does that make sense? Like, that's kind of how I always thought of it. But, I mean, having Anastasia actually take Will's heart would be really tragic. Like, exactly how she said. Like, that would be incredibly tragic.
Yeah.
And we love tragic stories.
Oh, we do. We're just suckers for tragedy around here. Our next bit of feedback is from Joan, who left a really, really long comment, but I'm just going to kind of synthesize it down. And she says, I'm a Swanfire shipper. She said, I swear, but I'm nice. I didn't even know Swanfire had a name. I just always say Neil Emma. I didn't realize it was called Swanfire. But okay, cool, it's got a name. And she says, I swear I'm nice, I come in peace. LOL, seriously, I like Hook, and I really, really like Emma. I just don't particularly like them together, but I get it. I get why tons of people do. As for me, the idea makes me uncomfortable, for the most part in terms of how does it relate to Balefire and Hook's history. And then she also was going on to sort of questioning Hook's motives and history. How do you guys feel? Because obviously what they're going to be kind of building up here is the love triangle, or perhaps it'll turn into something of a quadrangle, because that's what these guys are known for. How do you guys feel? Like, what do you guys think the shape of that love triangle is in these days? Like, do you think it's still there? Is it going to be, yeah, like, Emma and Neil now, and Hook is but a fleeting memory? Or what do you guys think the future of this love triangle is? You know, or is the Swanfire ship firmly sailing off into the distance, or is Hook maybe going to come in there?
I think it's pretty balanced, actually. Emma obviously has a little bit going on with Hook. She does have a little bit of feelings for Hook. Hook likes her. And then Neil and Emma's relationship is kind of rocky right now, but they're back together again. He's alive. Maybe it can work out. Who knows? So I think that both of the guys are on fairly equal footing. I've always been, you know, Neil and Emma have always sort of had a stronger pull for me because they have so much history, but I do really want Hook to just be happy. So it's kind of difficult for me to choose, but I definitely get what Joan is saying here and how it makes her a little uncomfortable, because not only do Bay and Hook have a history, but you also have to remember that, like, what was it? Like, Hook was with Mila, who is Bay's mother.
Like, yes,
the whole
seriously
thing,
it can
is so screwed
out
up. And you know, everybody having, you know, some sort of connection kind of goes back to this weird family tree, but I can see why Hook and Emma together is kind of weird to some people.
Yeah, as a huge Hook and Emma shipper, because I love them. I really, really do. And it may have more to do with the fact that I just really love Hook. I love the character.
Yeah.
I love the actor. I love everything about him in this series. Like, he's by far my favorite. I think that for the time being, it's going to kind of be Neil and Emma figuring out where they stand, because as we saw in this episode, Emma is still feeling the pain from what's happened in their past. And so because of that, she doesn't necessarily want to be with him, even though she, you know, will always kind of love him and always have feelings for him. And he kind of said, I'm never going to stop fighting for you. So there's not exactly a good thing going on there. Like, they're still trying to figure stuff out. But I think Hook will continue to play a role in it. Like, he is not going to just give up because Neil's around. Like, he's going to continue to kind of fight for Emma and say, listen, like, you have all this history with him, but we've never, you know, given it a shot, and I think we could be good together. Like, I think it would be really, really cute.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, too, with, like, this unknown Bay and Hook history, like, you know, are they still friends? Like, how close were they before? And is that going to affect things? Like, are they going to sort of be gentlemen to each other, or are they going to really go at it? And I think that's going to add a whole nother dimension that we haven't even seen yet.
I've definitely watched it, and I can't say that, like, I'm strongly aboard any ship. And it's not that I have a problem with whatever anybody wants to ship or anything. I just haven't until now felt like I personally have a ship that I'm like, oh yes, my one true pairing. I'm rooting, like, for this particular ship, or I'm all about this particular ship. But I think the one that I'm sort of closest to feeling the love on is that Swanfire ship, as she calls it. And for me, I think the draw has always been more Neil than Emma. I just really am very, very attracted to the character of Neil and everything that he's done and everything he's gone through. And I guess this week, I think I was finally feeling the Emma Neal ship because she was finally honest. I think this is the first time I've had kind of a pull towards a very specific ship on the show. And it was kind of interesting for me because before this, I wasn't really on board with a ship. But now I'm like, okay, so this Swanfire thing, I may be sailing on that, but we'll see. We'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm kind of like afraid to get too attached to a ship because, you know, you never know what happens to it. And my Walking Dead ship right now looks like it's really dead and I'm slightly upset. So I'm a little afraid to get attached to a ship in another fandom right now, but we'll see what happens.
I have to ask, are you Daryl Carroll?
Oh God, yes. Aww. I'm so pathetic. I know. Okay. I know. Along with like 3 million other women. I know. I mean, is it not like the most
adorable thing? Yes.
Yes, it's pathetic, but yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Because my heart's been crushed. So, yeah, but it's not that I dislike Emma, but I want Neil to be happy more. Is that sad? I don't know.
No, I think the reason why Neil is so compelling is that he was sort of like Hook in that he was kind of a bad guy. And, you know, that's why Emma liked him. And now he's really straightened out and he's being responsible and he's putting the things that are important to him first, like Emma, like Henry, like his family. And there's something very compelling about a guy who will just do that. You know, I mean, he's willing to put everything on the line in order to save the people that he loves. And I think Emma needs somebody like that. I think Hook is still a little too rough around the edges, and she needs some of the consistency that's in Neil now.
Yeah, I just feel like he is like the survivor's survivor. Like, he's just like learned so much and grown so much that it's just, I don't know. I think that's probably what attracts me to Neil really a lot. I just really love his character and everything that he's done and how much he's stepping up to do things. So, anyway, I guess it will remain to be seen, and if I'm lucky, my ship won't be crushed and pulverized. So.
I was going to say, I think there's something... the weird thing is, when you have a triangle, there's usually a random fourth that's kind of hanging off on the side that is the automatic other pairing so that the third person doesn't just end up being, you know, left in the lurch. And here, I don't really know where that... you know, who Hook or Bay would end up with, because they both have such tragic backstories and tragic histories that, and neither one of them has been outright evil in their lives. So you want them both to be happy, but there's no like easy fix for whoever doesn't get Emma.
Yeah. Not of people certainly who have encountered each other. Although, you know what, I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to go out on a limb and say what it's probably going to be. I bet you it's going to be Hook Mulan. I bet you. Some way, somehow, they're going to do that.
But isn't Mulan in love with...
Aurora.
Aurora or the prince, like whichever way people are interpreting. I don't know. I'm not so sure if she... See, I'm curious. I that's another way. I want to see which way that goes. Because I can see the argumentation for Mulan being in love with Aurora. And I can also see the argumentation... for Mulan being in love with Aurora's prince, whose name just went right out of my head. So I'm kind of...
Philip.
So I can see that going, and I totally see the argument on both sides there. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious how that happens.
Could be interesting.
So anyway, folks, thanks for listening to this week's episode of Onceable. I know we really enjoyed discussing this episode, and hopefully Jen won't think that we got too out of line without her here to keep us on topic, but hopefully Jen's cold will be better next week and she'll be back to lead us all. So until the next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.